Hopefully you guys can hear me. Thank you guys very much. Looking forward. Some of you guys might know me as Crypto Bobby. I actually go by Rob Paon in the real world. CryptoRob.com wasn't available, so I'm now Crypto Bobby. And I am joined by a panel of five really interesting people. They are building a number of interesting projects that most of are actually live and usable, unlike a lot of other projects out there right now. So if you wouldn't mind welcoming Don, Alex, Tomas, Ron, and Stefan, and I'll have them come up here and introduce themselves in a little bit more detail.
Up here.
What's up? Just sit here. So I'll pass it over down the line just for a quick 30-second introduction of kind of who you are and what project you're working on, then we'll dive into it. Start with you, Don.
It works. Okay. My name's Don Macedas. I'm one of the founders of a company called AirSwap. We are getting some feedback right now. We are a decentralized trading marketplace for Ethereum tokens. What that means is that the trades on our platform are peer-to-peer, and we think that this is. We think. Does this work?
Yes.
Okay. We believe that our system of peer-to-peer trade is an excellent foundation for decentralized trade. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Stefan George. Can you hear me? Yeah. I'm Stefan George. I'm a CTO and co-founder of Gnosis. Gnosis is a prediction market platform based on Ethereum. And within the last 8 months, we have also been working on building decentralized exchanges, because essentially prediction markets are a great tool to create new types of tokens, and we have to find means to efficiently trade them. And we think there's still lots of room for improvements, and what differentiates us from other exchanges is that we really believe in batch auctions. Yeah? So today, almost all exchanges are using something called continuous auctions, order books, essentially. And they have been built for like centralized exchanges as we know them. But if you want to apply this to blockchain, there are many, trade-offs we have to take, and that's why we think we should apply a different model to it.
Hey, I'm Thomas, co-founder of Ledger. So you may know about Ledger Wallet, Ledger Nano S. It's a hardware wallet to keep your crypto safe. It helps you sleep well at night if you've got enough money. and basically, we started as a wallet company storing cryptocurrency, starting with Bitcoin, Ethereum. And what we are seeing that is a trend towards decentralization, people needing to have ownership of the keys and interacting more and more with smart contracts, most of which being like decentralized exchange. That's where you see a lot of traction. And wanted to enable people to securely manage their keys, interact with smart contracts, and enable safe trades on these platforms.
My name is Ron Bernstein. I'm the CEO and founder of Paradex. Paradex is a 0x protocol-based relayer, allowing peer-to-peer exchange of ERC-20 tokens. We're focused on preserving the best of the traditional trading models and world and combining that with the advantages that blockchain provides. We're non-custodial, and we're very focused on arbitrage, market makers, and a very intuitive trading experience.
My name is Alex Wern. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Aurora. We're most well known for our first product, IDEX, which is a hybrid decentralized exchange operating on the Ethereum network. We launched in October, and we've had a lot of success since then with one of the top decentralized exchanges by volume and over 130,000 users using the platform so far. Similar to Ron, at Paradex, we're really focused on pragmatic use of decentralization, fitting a blockchain into a trading system, but doing so in a way that's still user-friendly and familiar to traders.
Awesome. Well, appreciate the introduction there. And I think the first thing that we can dive into is, I think it was touched on initially, and many of the individuals on the panel right now are building on top of Ethereum. And maybe we could touch on, if somebody wants to kick things off, as far as what specific tools, whether it's Ethereum or if there is kind of another component of that, another platform with that, that you really feel like is enabling you to successfully build your product or platform as well. If you want to take that.
Paradex is a great example of trying to build a business on top of an open source protocol that's being developed by others with its own ecosystem. We rely on the 0x protocol, which is modular, it's upgradable, it's very, very highly tested, and it provides us the essential pieces that allow us to take our centralized aspects, which is the order book that we host, and then use the benefits by submitting settlement to the blockchain and using a public blockchain. So the tool that we depend on are these really highly vetted smart contracts built by 0x.
So on our side, if this is working, we believe that trade was really decentralized with the advent of the blockchain itself and the movement of value between peers. And so the system that we have in place takes advantage of the power of Ethereum itself and what is a very simple smart contract to do an atomic swap between peers. Our service lives off-chain to actually allow these peers to find each other, and then they can make connections directly with each other to make trades. So between the execution and the clearing and the custody, those are all decentralized in our system, and we just depend on Ethereum for that activity.
So in our case, like the first iteration of our exchange will actually be just one smart contract, and there's nothing really off-chain, which also has some advantages. So for example, if you would do things off-chain, then there is no interoperability between other smart contracts in this exchange, because then you require something like the private key to sign something. So actually having something that's purely on-chain has also advantages. Of course, there are the drawbacks of having to pay transaction fees every time. But the way our exchange is built is, because we're using an auction, and we're using something called Dutch auction, everyone who's participating is always committed. Yeah, there's no cancellation of orders, so there's not a drawback of actually participating and having any risk that your transaction might fail and you still have to pay transaction fees. In general, I think we will see that lots of the exchange space will move to layer two protocols. Yeah, right now, we can build exchanges directly on Ethereum, or we can try to build some other protocols on top of this. And the easiest way to do it right now is using something like 0x. Yeah, that's something. Oh my God, that's something that works today. It's relatively easy to implement, but it's also just like the next step. And I think later today we'll see a presentation about Plasma. And what we'll see is that Plasma is basically a way to build a sidechain for a specific purpose, like a decentralized exchange, which allows to have the same security as Ethereum, but at the same time have much higher transaction throughput and not much less gas costs compared to what you have on Ethereum directly. So we will see that lots of exchanges will move to those layer two protocols. And I hope this will be actually done by the end of the year, so it will not take that much time.
So I think all of us are actually, with the exception of Ledger, are building exchanges using the Ethereum protocol. So obviously for us, it's a hugely important tool. And I think what you just heard was there's different trade-offs to different approaches, but we're all trying to figure out that usability component, right? So I think we're all trying to think about where does decentralization fit in? Like there's a spectrum of decentralization where everything's on-chain, centralized exchanges use none of it, right? You're basically, everything's off-chain and you're just sending them your currency and they're holding on to it in the interim. So I think that's one of the, just as a general tool, we're thinking about decentralization and where it fits into our business models. One other thing that I was thinking about when reflecting on this question is just the human element that goes into creating, in particular, a two-sided market like a trading platform. So one of our tools, so to speak, has been our community. So we did a good job early on fostering kind of believers in what we were building, our platform. Interacting with them, we make sure that we have support staff out there able to talk to people 24/7 to build that stable of support that then helps generate that ever-important network effect and liquidity that's necessary for an exchange to flourish.
So yeah, indeed, we're a layer below. We are not building like some protocols on top of Ethereum. And basically some people tie some value to some private keys, and they want to make sure that these private keys are stored securely. It's extremely complex to do so. For Bitcoin and cryptocurrency, you want to be your own bank, you need to have your keys, you need to make sure they are stored like in an offline environment. Still, you want to have some usability, and that's really the same trend that you're having with non-custodial decentralized exchanges, where people need to have their keys to engage in a trade, and doing so is extremely complex because you cannot screw up or else you lose everything. So we really want to, based on our product, build some right APIs to make sure that we can integrate with these folks, building decentralized application to make sure that they can scale, they can be more secure, and help go toward this movement.
Yeah. And I think that's right, because what's very important to us as a non-custodial exchange is that tools that we build on really do depend on the way that users can custodian their own assets. So Ledger and the ability to leave your assets under your pillow at night, critically important. We also use MetaMask as a Web3 enabler for people to interact. And we do like to draw that line where we don't have to be custodians of user assets. And that way, we feel very comfortable just focusing on the middle exchange piece.
Absolutely. And something you had said, Alex, just in regards to kind of some of the, I think, challenges and finding that optimal level of decentralization, and something else that was mentioned previously was some of the scaling and layer two solutions out there. From your perspective right now, since everybody has some level of product out there, but I would say it's everyone is kind of in that formative stage at this point in time, what do you view as some of the larger obstacles to building a platform or a product that is even more widely adopted than we are currently at right now?
I think one of the biggest challenges is that the way how we currently can build decentralized applications really requires lots of education of the user. Yeah, so the user has to understand what a private key is, has to understand what is the importance of the private key. If he's losing this, then he's losing access to all funds. So there we have to do a better job. Basically, we have to come up with solutions where users don't have to understand what a private key is. Yeah, they don't have to understand what gas costs are. And we have to abstract all this away from the user. The user just should interact with the exchange as he would with any kind of centralized exchange. And I think this is like the biggest challenge we have. And then, of course, like the other big challenge is just scalability. You know, we have to be able to actually offer something that's competitive to centralized exchanges. And this cannot be done if you just rely on Ethereum today. Even if you're using 0x, that is still not sufficient to be really competitive to a centralized exchange today. So, but there's hope. Yeah, there's Plasma, something that can be done in the near term that will allow much higher transaction throughput. And then in terms of private key management, I think we will see a shift from private key controlled accounts to smart contract based accounts. Yeah, so smart contracts that can build in logic that allows recovery of accounts in case you're losing the private key. And if we have actually sufficient solutions for that, then we never have to tell the user that he owns a private key. We can just totally obfuscate this, and in case they're losing it, we can just offer them recovery options.
Yeah. I'll add to that. I think he nailed it with education and security as those two big buckets. So with the education piece, I think we're all fortunate enough that our customers right now are early adopters, they're interested in the technology, they're out there learning on their own. They often know as much as we as founders do about the technology. You know, there's definitely a community that's grown around it, but it's not always gonna stay that way. And we've started to see people come in who don't understand, you know, the notion of using a private key as your account to log into a decentralized exchange. You know, they're used to a drop down on a website where you create a username and password. And so this notion of like bringing your own account to the system is a fundamental shift that, you know, we have to then educate the users to understanding that piece. And then on the security piece, I think it's a lot of it, Stefan alluded to, or I guess directly mentioned, was that it's developing quickly. We're starting to see hardware devices like Ledger come out that allow you to more securely store a private key offline. You know, if any of you ever tried to do the air-gapped computer approach where you like buy a laptop from a store and never connect it to the internet just to make sure that the private key like doesn't touch a network, it was a horrific experience. And you're kind of terrified while you're doing it that you're gonna leak it out there. So I think having those hardware solutions and then layering on top smart contracts and software to make it easier to interact with without screwing up is a way that we can replicate kind of the security and I guess ease of use that we have with current centralized systems without taking away that fundamental control of data or assets that blockchain allows for.
And we at AirSwap focus very much on usability and certainly try to pare down the trading experience to its core. But it can be extremely easy to use, but you still need to go through that initial hurdle of actually letting somebody understand what the tools are that they're using. I do think that some of the recent mobile applications that have come to, even in the last few months, have been extremely powerful and have done a great job from a usability standpoint to bring new people into the ecosystem. The people that truly understand what it means to be in control and to control your own assets and for that to be the, to use these non-custodial exchanges, as Ron was saying, are going to be the people that can pick up a ledger and use it and understand it. But I think that you guys certainly do have some challenges ahead of you, but that's where it really is. So we have full faith.
But I guess we're still it's still very early in the way that 1 year ago there was basically nothing happening in that space. And now you really start to have like some early working prototypes, a bit of volume, but there's still a lot of things to solve, like in terms of scalability, in terms of UX as well a little bit, and getting some liquidity on this platform as well. Just you're one of this, and there's a lot of bright minds working on improving this solution. And we really want to be one part of it to enable that. And we've got a product that is as is today, and it will be evolving, whether it be for mostly institutional product clients that need to interact with this decentralized exchange as well, or some improvement on the interaction and the usage of ledger powered device or ledger device behind some other type of tools like the one that Gnosis might be developing. So really being part to enable this ecosystem to grow.
Yeah, and we saw Ledger mainstreaming on TV, I guess, last week in billions and things like that. And if we're focused on adoption and spreading the potential user base and education, that's a great way to get more people interested and take a shot at using these tools. So just more awareness is great.
If I may, so I think that education is very important, and that's about bringing people into the ecosystem.
Right.
But we have to actively educate in a sense that this is very. Like if something goes wrong, then it really goes wrong. Like you are in control, and it's not only that this is a hurdle to be a part of the ecosystem, but it's also you have to be vigilant and you have to take very good care of yourself, because not just managing wallets, but constant threats of phishing scams and things like that. So there's just this kind of active threat, and when people are yes.
And on this one, definitely, we've seen a shift from back in 2014, 2015, where, we saw, according to the number of units that we were selling, people, they had their keys, there was not that much value attached to it, but like 2017, a lot of people understood the importance of owning their own keys, and we really start to see this shift where people start to understand, as soon as you got enough value, you don't want to leave it on an exchange or leave it like on a wallet that where the keys are exposed to the network. So I think people start to really understand this power of owning your own keys. We are part of it, but there's still a lot of things to do. But yeah, this shift is clearly, you can see it like happening pretty hard.
And I think from the user interface experience, like my Ether wallet or my crypto now, whichever one it is, have done an interesting job, because when you log into that and you have the pop-up that's basically like, this is not a bank, there's like 75 red X's and telling you, don't lose your keys and we're not gonna help you with customer support when you lose them. I think that's kind of maybe going to Don's point. That's one thing from like an education standpoint where, just kind of continually informing people along the line. And I remember hearing a podcast with that, which I think it was Laura from my Ether wallet, I forget the former CEO there, co-founder, where she had talked a bunch about that and just the level of maybe between like August and January of last year, the level of new people adopting in the space. I think that's kind of a really interesting aspect. But going to maybe some of the things you just mentioned, and obviously there's a lot of challenges still existing right now. What would you view as maybe the biggest opportunity for, if it's another service or another product to come out that would add a ton of value or solve some of these challenges, whether it's a layer two scaling solution or anything else that you feel like would just add a ton of value to what you're doing and help to overcome some of the challenges and the obstacles that you face?
I'm actually going to jump on that scaling solution. So I think we're seeing it with the Ethereum network. It's often operating at capacity. We all have products on that network. And there's a bunch of competing blockchains that are coming out that are making certain trade-offs, certain sacrifices on either decentralization or kind of the way that the consensus algorithm is generated to focus on solving some of those pain points of transaction throughput. Anecdotally speaking with other companies, I do think there's people that are holding back products, holding back services until those solutions are available because they think that the user experience is going to suffer if they're unable to provide that higher throughput. You're also seeing some of the sidechain solutions start to get developed. So Loom is an interesting one that's working on sidechains for specific applications. In particular, the non-fungible token variety, think of CryptoKitties, where you could have a high transaction volume. In general, the transactions are each one individually are not super valuable, so you're able to sacrifice a little bit on security through the sidechain approach because you want to get that benefit of scalability. So there's a lot of different companies and even protocols out there looking at different ways of approaching that fundamental problem.
Yep.
So one of the first things that you'll do when you go to use a centralized exchange or trading system is you'll often identify yourself. Right? You'll give them some kind of identity information so they can, meet whatever regulatory expectations they have. And then you'll deposit your funds. And it's the combination of these two things, I think, the former not really being served quite the same way as the latter. So we're focusing on decentralizing custody pretty effectively, I think. But giving people control over their information and the ability to selectively submit or identify with counterparties on an open network, I think is going to be a really important thing and certainly an opportunity from a product perspective.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. From an exchange perspective, and certainly because we're dependent on someone else's protocol that we've built on top of, we're really excited about some of the topics we talked about later, like securitization and sovereign identity. We'd like to stay focused on that middle piece, but we'd also love to see these standards come about for tokenization of all kinds of different assets, where we can still be non-custodial of that type of asset. But also what you were just alluding to is for us to be non-custodial of user data. So we know that someone has done the identity piece. It doesn't have to be us, but we can leverage that and just use the exchange to connect the two enabled parties.
So from the standpoint, I think it's interesting because we have, like we said, multiple decentralized exchanges, trading platforms, things like that. And then we have Ledger here as well, which is, I think, a pretty integral component of what almost everyone here is building, in addition to some of the other maybe alternatives outside of Ledger. Can you describe some of, I guess, the maybe current challenges with integration? We can start with some of the platforms, then we'll go over to Ledger as far as maybe how kind of some of the challenges on your end as far as integrating with some of these solutions as well. We'd love to hear some of the kind of issues maybe or challenges that you have to deal with when you're integrating with a MetaMask or a Ledger or a Treasure and how that process works for you.
There are tons of tools and there are tons of APIs and lots of documentation. It's a very dynamic space though and implementing the interfaces to all of these different tools can be kind of a pain sometimes. Working with Ledger is a pleasure. We integrate as many wallets as we can because we want to give people the ability to use the wallets that they hold their assets in on the platform.
So I think that we focus on we've always been very focused on one thing. It's like providing a good security and good UX to manage like private keys. We started with some APIs for people to interact with it, and that's also a beauty of the Ethereum community. It's like it's really self-starting. People started to work on the integration, building some GS providers so that it could integrate easily with other type of D apps. And basically what we want to do is just like be very close to that community of developer and making sure that we can adapt our product, adapt our APIs to make it as easy as possible to integrate. So today it's fairly easy. I know it could be way easier, way better, and we're just like we'll make some steps to make it as easy as possible to integrate, interact with these D apps for sure.
So yeah, maybe to add to this, so theoretically it should be extremely simple because there is an API, and there should be a standard on how to implement this API. And then theoretically, all wallets should be compatible with all DApps and all decentralized exchanges. But the fact is that the job of making, of versionizing this API has been done very poorly. So there is actually quite a lot of incompatibilities, which makes it then really difficult to actually make sure that every app works with every wallet. So I think if we want to solve this problem, we first really have to make sure that we agree on the same API, that there's really an official API that everyone can implement and that's versionized. And then it should be really straightforward. Right now, like based on our experience, it still takes time to, and you really have to test every single wallet that you want to integrate. Yes, and fortunately, right now, mostly people use MetaMask or Ledger wallets. So we just target those two. But there are obviously many other wallets. We would always have to test everything. And yeah, we have been, like, many times something has been breaking. And this is just really horrible for the user experience. Also, for us testing everything is just, really an annoying task. So I think we really have to first make sure, and I think the Ethereum Foundation and the community itself, we have to lead the effort to make sure that we all really agree on the same standards.
From an integration perspective specifically, unique to this panel today, we're completely dependent upon 0x smart contracts. So most of our integration time and our development time has been, focused on making sure we interact off-chain and on-chain in the most seamless way. And we just keep, pressing it so that process of now we're off-chain and now we're moving on-chain becomes almost invisible.
Just to add something that wasn't touched on yet, so we focus on, similar to Steph, we focus on MetaMask and Ledger because they're prolific and definitely the top solutions in terms of wallets for interacting with our site. One of the things we do find ourselves, I think the integration itself has been pretty easy. We haven't had any significant challenges there from a technical perspective, but we do find ourselves educating users often on how those tools work. Someone comes to the site and says, okay, I finally got my Ledger, I pulled the Ether off of Binance, like now what do I do? And so, our staff's talking them through, how it works, things you need to enable in order to make it operate and work with the exchange. Or similarly with MetaMask, if you ever used it, there's an approval pop-up and we get occasionally people saying, I made a deposit and nothing happened, and well, what are you using MetaMask? And sure enough, they missed the pop-up that came in, asked for their transaction signature. So I think that's just an interesting piece, is that because integration is a fantastic thing, but then you're having that education component to make sure customers understand every piece of the ecosystem, even something that you might not control or create yourself.
And as dynamic as the developer tools can be and how they implement the APIs, I think we can all be thankful, at least for some of the token standards, because of course those let us do what we do pretty well, and I think that really just is the essence of the takeoff of tokenization. But just also to note on the other side, I think that there is there's an opportunity to think of integrations into our respective platforms. So we talk about serving other applications or other front ends or other pieces of software, maybe some market makers or something like that. I think that's an equally important part of the integration picture.
So with the blockchain cryptocurrency world, I think it started off as a very highly technical space, and there has been more and more adoption from regular end users or non-highly technical folks. So how have you looked at trying to maybe improve product usability to be more accessible to somebody who does not have a highly technical background Is there any specific thing that you've done or that you are doing in the future to increase the usability?
So on our platform, our goal is that once you connect your wallet and deposit, after that, it feels like a centralized exchange. That's when we know we've done our job. If someone says, oh, I know this experience, I'm familiar with this. One simple example is abstracting the need for Ether to pay gas fees. So depending on what side of the trade an individual is taking, they either receive Ether or tokens. And if they're receiving tokens, we'll actually do the conversion for them to deduct that from their balance and then essentially charge them the equivalent amount of Ether that they would be paying in gas. So small example of how the, you know, the way you want to kind of insulate them from some of the challenges of using a blockchain for custody, trade, and settlement, and eliminate the need for them to have to learn all these technical details if they don't actually need to know them in order to get the product or service.
Yeah, I think for us there's a standard that's really useful, and it's almost demanded by the generation of crypto early adopters and the way things are being adopted. And that's really thinking about the way people are going to use these apps and dApps on their phones, right? So if we can kind of measure ourselves against how easy it is to make trades on the fly, to access your assets, to exchange those assets, either in a retail location or, you know, within a dApp itself, it's a really good UI UX goal to strive for.
We try to make the complexity of the process as easy as possible, but there's some stuff that guy who buys a ledger wants to own their keys, they need to own their keys. So at one stage, you need to be in control, so you've got some responsibility, and we try to make that process as easy as possible. So right now, it's about writing 24 words, and we try to make that process as easy as possible so that you got the words, you can check that you haven't screwed up and you're good to go. And right now it's okay, like people are okay with this process, and we've got some ways to improve it, ways to split the keys among different parties and people having the ability to be aware of the scheme that they're using. So that are part of the improvements we want to do. I think also the fact that it's physical is something that we realize people actually like, and it's easier for them to kind of represent their keys. Having your key somewhere, it's kind of hard. You say, okay, it's on my computer somewhere. At least you know it's here. So it's actually quite good for people to represent, and when they enter the space, say, okay, I've got some gold, I've got some cash, I know it's in my pocket. Okay, I've got my ledger, I've got a backup, I will know where it is. It's physical, I can feel it. So it's really reassuring, and it can abstract some of that complexity. So that's one part of it. And I think the community has been doing a pretty good job at explaining new users what it means to get in the crypto space. So I think at the very beginning, okay, we're very nerdy people, and you could set up your own offline computer for that purpose. Now, hardware wallet is a good compromise to get it offline in a more simple way. But this community makes the job of educating people what you should do to enter the space. And it's funny because we've had some people who bought a ledger even before buying some crypto. So they say, okay, I make some research what it means to get some crypto. You need to hold it is hard. Get a hardware wallet, get to a ledger or another one, and they're good to go. So the community is making some good job at pointing to the right direction. And I think there will be some other stuff as well multi-sig type of solution based on smart contracts to make it easier again. But the backups will need to still be stored somewhere. Hardware wallet is a good solution for that.
Yeah, so building on top of that, so Gnosis, we are trying to have basically more control over the entire user experience. And this includes also building a wallet solution. Yeah, a wallet solution where users don't have to understand what a private key is, because we can build in recovery modes. And there, hopefully, we can also collaborate with Ledger on this to build something that's really convenient to use. Because right now we have, I just returned from South Korea. In South Korea, 30% of the population, they own already cryptocurrency. So it's already, it's not a niche market, there's almost mass adoption already. And now, those are all trading on a centralized exchange. If we want them to trade on a decentralized exchange, then we have to create a security setting where everyone feels comfortable with withdrawing the money, right? And we cannot expect that those 30 million or, I don't know, like 10, 20 million users, that they actually understand like what private keys are. So yeah, we have to find a solution where they don't necessarily have to understand this. And that's why we try to build the solution as well, having this as the entry point to decentralized exchange infrastructure.
So just quickly to demonstrate how we think of usability, if you navigate to airswap.io, you'll actually see some assets available there because people have come online and made those available for trade. And so what that means when you select one of those, indicate an amount, click a button, get a price, and make a trade, that it can just happen very fluidly. So once the once you've worked out the wallet from which you'd like to make a trade, it's really as simple as 1, 2, 3. And for us, just in the mentality when we look at this from a design perspective, just paring it down, just really imagining what the use case in this particular situation is, and just trying to trim away everything else, because it's so tempting to build in functionality and lots of really cool features all the time. Maybe this is just like a general kind of product design challenge, but in many ways, it's about not being undone until there's nothing left to take away. So.
I have to say, AirSwap has one of the best user experiences that I've seen so far in the DApp space. You should definitely try it out if you haven't.
So looking at all of the projects up here, everyone is approaching some type of decentralized, for the most part, approaching some type of decentralized solution. And in the case of Ledger, you know, kind of holding your keys in a decentralized manner, I guess there is no centralized party there holding that as well. When you look at the current ecosystem, I think the majority of, I don't want to say success, but a lot of the largest adoption right now is on the central, whether it's a centralized exchange or something like that. How do you perhaps see the industry moving, considering some of the centralized exchange hacks that have happened and just kind of general adoption? Do you see a path from centralization now with a lot of these projects to a more decentralized environment? How do you see that moving, and maybe like what time frame do you see that occurring as well?
I think it's not going to happen unless usability pretty much matches the existing centralized exchange experience. I think that's almost a requirement. I think about this a lot in terms of the security aspect. Like, we're all, you know, one of the things we're all selling is this notion of control your private keys, maintain your own security. That's one, only good if you think you are more secure than a centralized entity, right? Like, be your own bank is a great motto if you think you are better at security than a bank. For a lot of these people out there. So that's one, like, how do we give them the tools that they feel comfortable holding it themselves, not that they're gonna screw up and say, you know what, Binance hasn't had an issue yet, I'm just gonna leave my stuff on Binance, right? And then I think two is because security is not, it's not front and center until it happens to you. You know, if you have been trading, you know, on many of these platforms, if you weren't around in some of the earlier days and haven't actually lost funds, then it feels like more of a latent issue. It's not as pressing as usability and liquidity. So until those components kind of match or exceed centralized exchanges, I think it's gonna be, you're still kind of focusing on the early adopters, those that do value those other properties that a decentralized exchange can offer right now that a centralized exchange cannot.
And I think there's also a pragmatic spectrum where people use a number of different venues to store their assets. For example, if you trade, you know, frequently, you might need to keep a certain amount of assets on an exchange so you have instant access all the time. And if it's part of your business, you're not looking to move them and, you know, put them under your pillow at night. But if you trade a little bit and you have a bunch of assets and you may not want to keep all your assets in one place, then it makes sense to kind of segment, you know, here's my trading money and then here's my store of value, or, you know, the stuff that I want to put in my vault. And a cold storage versus, you know, an offline storage. Those are the kind of things that you make personal choices about, but it doesn't have to be binary. It doesn't have to be all my money offline or all my money in centralized.
And the products are not still perfect yet, and the offering is not like complete in the way that you go on a centralized exchange because, you want to trade between, you're lazy and you want to trade between ERC20 tokens, and you want to trade between other type of pairs. So I think that people are lazy and go to the easiest solution. Yep. I think like for decentralized exchange, the traction that there was mostly like on new pairs, in a way that well, the decentralized exchange will always be well faster to integrate like the latest ICO to be trading and making the flips. I think that's where you can have something that you cannot have like on a centralized exchange, is to have like this speed to integrate like new tokens, and also like giving the ability like through third party wallets or services, well, to make like some faster trades, because you don't necessarily require to go through a lengthy onboarding process. So these are like the strength of the decentralized exchange. That's where like I guess there will be like the first like proper use case, because you cannot do it with a centralized exchange. So speed of integration of a new ICO, not requiring a lengthy onboarding process. These are the stuff to focus on, I guess.
Yeah, very much agree with this. We see in the history of centralized exchanges, like Poloniex has been one of the most, or has been the most popular exchange, centralized exchange. By now, it's not anymore. And I think the main reason for that is that they were not able to list most of the new tokens. So they just didn't have any liquidity for those. And obviously, like the speed of creating new tokens is just going up. So there are more and more tokens on Ethereum every day. And hardly any of them can be traded on any centralized exchange. So naturally, I think decentralized exchanges will take over time. And I hope within the next, let's say, 1 or 2 years, this will happen, that we can offer the same usability as a centralized exchange without having the risk of losing your money, and also with the much bigger liquidity.
So we, to echo actually several of these sentiments, we think that centralized trading systems, centralized exchange, is like maybe the greatest single threat to this ecosystem. Centralization works in many cases, but it's really antagonistic and antithetical to this whole movement, I think. And to the point about scalability, we believe that that the model that we have, because we don't have a listing process, because the stuff available on AirSwap is made available by the people that join the system and announce that they're trading something. So we think there's something really powerful and scalable in that. But in terms of actually moving away from centralized systems, we internally call it the Great Liquidity Migration. And we believe that it actually comes in different components, to Ron's point about the different kinds of assets and the different kinds of liquidity, whether this is traded often and very quickly, whether this is traded much less often. There's this kind of long tail of assets that is filling out as more and more assets come online. And of course, you know, listing process really limits you there.
And one of the things that, you know, is a reality for us, you know, for ERC-20 exchange, we're limited to the Ethereum blockchain and the assets that trade on it, yet Ledger provides, you know, something you can call a cross-chain custodianship, right? You can control a number of different assets on a number of different chains. Right now, decentralized exchange hasn't quite caught up to that feature set.
And maybe we could bounce off that. So as far as how that might look in the future, do you have any plans or ideas around support of non-ERC-20 or non-Ethereum-based tokens like Bitcoin or like Monero or anything else like that, and how that might get incorporated into a decentralized trading platform? Is there any kind of, has that been a topic in your head at any point?
Yes, but we can't talk about it.
I think the best case scenario is that we find a way to wrap them as ERC-20 tokens or Ethereum tokens.
Yeah.
Because if you can hoist them into the ecosystem and make them available for trade, then they have the same liquidity properties as anything else.
Yeah, they're the biggest pairs by far right now that trade.
Yeah, I think so too. So there are teams working on blockchain interoperability. And I think as part of this, tokens will become available across different blockchains. And we can take advantage of that once it's ready to just add those as ERC-20 tokens. So it will be a Bitcoin ERC-20 token. It will be a Monero ERC-20 token. So they can all be traded on our decentralized exchange on Ethereum, or eventually on the Cosmos chain, or Polkadot chain. So,
yeah, I think I probably safe in saying that none of us want to give up the programmatic trading function that we have in order to onboard those other blockchains. So for example, you could create your own ERC-20, your own Bitcoin, that we take deposits from customers and create our own asset, right? And we could control the supply of that, and it could be a representation, and people could deposit and withdraw on our exchange. But that's, you know, as Don said, it's kind of antithetical to the whole movement of the ecosystem, which is everything is trustless, which is an odd term. Every time I hear it, it sounds like a bad thing, but it's actually a good thing. It means you don't need trust in order to make trades or to facilitate transactions between people. So I think that's really the key, is those trustless bridges or ways of bringing assets from other blockchains. And I do think, you know, interoperability will be a thing. Novogratz was talking about not needing 100 blockchains, but you know, maybe more will survive than we think if they're able to figure out the interoperability piece, so that there's not a downside to being on a chain. You're not siloed kind of outside of the ecosystem.
Just one last comment on migrating away from centralized systems. I think a really important aspect is still being good for market makers. Market makers need to be able to operate in the way that they do on centralized system, on decentralized systems. And so the way that they can do their business with a given protocol or platform, I think, is really important.
And going to that point as well, so liquidity on centralized exchanges versus decentralized exchanges was brought up, and there's been discussions about shared liquidity across decentralized exchanges or token trading platforms or whatever it might be. How are you viewing, I guess, maybe the challenge of bringing liquidity to your platforms right now? Is there anything specifically you're trying to do to address that at this point?
We thought about that a lot in the product design. So liquidity providers are constantly adding and removing orders. So we have in our system a way for them to, through one transaction, invalidate all previous orders that they've ever created. One of the challenges is if you're using a private key to sign an intention, a future trade, that intention is available for anyone to take at any time in the future. So you actually need to have an on-chain transaction to invalidate that action. So we tried to think about how can we give that functionality while at the same time not increasing their cost, because these guys are operating on the margin here. And then I think it goes to some of the earlier comments of what is appealing to people that use decentralized exchanges now. And we have heard from liquidity providers that they like that aspect because what keeps them up at night is having $10 million sitting on a centralized exchange and waking up in the morning and hoping that they haven't been the next victim, right? So I think that is an inherently appealing factor for them, that they can now be in control of their own kind of custody and security.
So we're working on the institutional grade wallet solution to securely manage different type of tokens, some of which will be like, of course, Ethereum and ERC-20 tokens. And I guess when we release the product, one of the things that we'll want to do afterwards is see of ways to have all these pools of liquidity that are sitting out to kind of stake them and make them work on the providing liquidity on different decentralized exchanges. So that could be also an option to there's a lot of money sitting and people are looking for some ways to make it work and market make on different platforms. And I guess like on decentralized exchange, it could be like some interesting integration to provide some of that liquidity. Another one will also be that you can have access to all the order books, so broker dealers can have access to it and place these orders on these decentralized exchange, whether it be wallet providers that want to offer to their users like ability to swap from a token to another one, or just like market broker dealers out there, that could also be an option.
So the way we approach it is just building comprehensive APIs, so we try to abstract all the complexity of smart contracts away from market makers, and also try to provide like basic infrastructure, like basic trading boards that they can build upon, as a start entry point.
We very early on when we went to, so we published a white paper last year for the swap protocol, which is a basic peer-to-peer protocol that introduced like a discovery mechanism or like a search, so you could find other peers and then make direct trades. So on our system, being a market maker is a matter of coming online and announcing that you are trading something so other people can discover you. And so that process is extremely simple. And we have been working with market makers for some time now since we actually announced the project to ensure that the protocols are good and correct. We actually have a pretty compelling update to our smart contract, our settlement layer that is in the wings that we're very excited about. So for us, it's a really simple process, and we get more and more interest every day from people approaching us about making markets on AirSwap because it's just a matter of coming online and making trades.
From the standpoint of what you had said, Tomas, as far as institutional, like building an institutional grade wallet with the 5 minutes that we have left here, how do the rest of you view institutional adoption for decentralized systems, since it's, at least in my opinion, seems like a pretty new concept to a lot of larger scale investors or traders?
So I think like for institutional clients, like crypto is something so new that they're starting to get around, so it's a first step. And if you tell them to trade on a decentralized exchange, well, I think you're a step ahead. So it will take some time for people first to start getting their head around this crypto thing, and then going on decentralized exchange is like another step. And right now where you're one or you're two of this type of stuff, so it's still very early on. But I think these type of institutions in some ways now are some kinds of whales or people who have large amount of crypto that act as, they have huge liquidity. So I think these would be the one that are willing to move faster because they have less constraints on that side and a better understanding of the space as well.
Yeah, it seems very true that even small institutions would be bigger than most typical retail customers. And in that regard, to make sure that market makers are enabled to, draw liquidity from other places to provide it on decentralized exchanges is important. But equally important is to make sure that retail customers who depend on super slick user interfaces or just, a semi-pro trading exchange, they express a willingness to pay for the feature set of non-custodial. And that's, if you want me as a market maker to take your custodial risk, you need to pay me a little bit to do that. And I think, it'll just keep stepping up against each other where liquidity will be provided by more market makers, the more retail comes in, and then the order sizes can improve.
On our end, because our system is peer-to-peer, it is actually an excellent kind of OTC-style trading system where you can make larger, like, block-style trades. Pretty easily. That is going to become more popular, we think. We began with a system that took professional liquidity providers and connected them to front ends that reach people around the world through the web. And that was the recent release. But there's certainly opportunity to build really what are ultimately simple tools for individuals to make over-the-counter trades very quickly and easily on our platform. An important aspect of that is, of course, KYC AML to ensure that the counterparty with whom you're trading is who they say they are, so you can work within the regulations of whatever jurisdiction you're trading. But we think that the tools are nearly there.
I think actually it would be really great to have them on all decentralized exchanges, but as you mentioned, KYC and AML would be required, and this is actually another big challenge. So if you think about they are probably many countries have different requirements. And if you all integrate them into decentralized exchanges, what it essentially means is that we don't have one GNO token, we don't have one Ether token, but the Ether token also has a property of what kind of KYC AML requirements are attached to it. So if you actually want to take it seriously and you want to make sure that people can only trade with the same required KYC and AML requirements, then you have many different tokens, but the same token. Yeah, so you have maybe 50 or 100 GNO tokens, all with different KYC requirements. So that's another big challenge that we'll probably have to solve. Yeah.
I think we could probably spend the next hour talking about KYC and AML, but we have about 30 seconds left. So I appreciate everybody's time on the panel. It was great speaking with you, and thank you for answering all the questions here today. And I hope you all enjoyed as well. Thanks. Thank you. Good.